To have that kind of energy. That high school energy.
Well, it's amphetamines. That's what it is. All right, it's 3:11. We're a little bit late. It's Wednesday, episode 3:11 on Taking Pictures. It's Wednesday the 11th. 3:11 on the 11th.
It's like a perfectly reasonable day and time. You just add the sound effect.
Imagine, if you will, two dudes doing a show.
Yeah. And it just so happens to be a Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Right. Dun, dun, dun. All right. So I've had my tuna sandwich. I've had my chips. Bill is back from the West Coast.
Bill's had his 2.5 hours of sleep.
Right. Back in Brooklyn. You know what? Quit complaining, mister. You're lucky you got a half hour of sleep.
Yeah.
Jefferson Dorson, Silver Spring, and welcome. Welcome to the show.
It's that whole thing where there's, you know, somebody's abusing someone else and they make them feel bad for complaining about being abused, you know, like right. That kind of.
Right. What is that? Florence Nightingale syndrome?
Oh, yeah. There's all those things, yeah. I always liked Munchausen's by proxy, like. You act as if your kid is sick so that you get attention or something.
What?
You
know
that? You never heard about that?
No. Wait. My kid's sick, so pay attention to me?
Yeah, there's
Is that a thing? Really?
Well, it's a it's one of those things. It's called a fastidious disorder imposed on self, also known as Munchausen's. It's a disorder wherein those affected feign disease, illness, psychological trauma to draw attention, sympathy, or reassurance to themselves. Munchausen's symptoms fit into the subclass of fastidious disorder, blah, 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 predominantly physical signs and symptoms. So they choose things that don't really have good tests to figure them out.
Ah, so they can't be proven wrong easily.
Right.
Wow.
And then there's the whole by proxy thing where you're like, my kid is sick. He complains about this. And the kid's just like sits there because he's scared. And it's really messed up. You have to watch all of House and you'll see this at least 3 times.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's in House. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the crazy stuff that, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there you
lots
go.
Lots of interesting things. Well, fascinating though. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
So.
Moving on.
Last week we had an interesting discussion. Go back and listen to episode 310. And we got a response to it. And didn't want to spend a bunch of time on it. I just wanted to acknowledge Chip for sending this in. Chip Riggs, it is a lovely response. He writes, I think it's a weird and somewhat unfortunate aspect of the human condition. Instead of being aware, really aware, of the gifts we have, all we can see are the shadows in between the glory. And I love that because I am guilty of that myself. I'm guilty of and I think we all are to a certain degree of elevating our first world problems to something akin to paralysis, right?
Or, sure. Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you, Chip. Didn't go unnoticed.
Huh? Do you think that is a? You said first world problems, and I said sure, and I agree with you, and I think I know what you mean. But do you mean to say that? Having options is like you have it too good, right? You know what I mean? Like if you have the option to do multiple things, that's where you can get stuck because there's too many things you could do.
Well, okay, look, if you're sitting in your car or your house or your office on your broadband internet connection, listening to the two of us knuckleheads drone
Lester,
on about things.
You sound like Lester Bangs right now and almost
you know, you've got it pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah,
right? True. I mean, if you are listening to this show right now, relative to a good percentage of the world's population, you've got it pretty good.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And that's what I'm meaning. Despite all of that, we can still go, my lens isn't sharp or, you know, whatever. I need more megapixels, whatever it is, right?
Wait, who was that was saying that?
I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, it's that, but we do. We fall into that thing where, you know, we don't see what is so good in our lives. We focus on what's wrong with our lives. And to be fair, there's a lot of crap that's going on in America. There's a lot of crap that's going on in Europe. There's a lot of crap going on everywhere. But where I sit right here in you know, my little house in the woods in Silver Spring, I've got it pretty damn good, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's true.
So that's what I meant by it.
I totally agree with it.
Yeah.
So I put in this Instagram thing, and then I think you wrote social media, the real barrier of entry into creativity. You see those as related?
I do see them as related. Let's do the contact sheets thing first, and then I'll okay. It may answer or address some of the things that I was thinking about.
I found an article I was flipping around on Huffington Post the other day, and it said 4 Instagrammers show us how many photos they took before nailing the shot, in quotes. You really need
and
to shoot.
Can
a bunch
I just
to,
say, yeah. Please do not refer to yourself as an Instagrammer. Please don't do that.
Well, you always got to remember the headline people write the headlines. So, you know,
please. It's like a YouTuber. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
These are people that want to be famous for being famous. Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, I'm with you. So
continue.
And in here, I just know that you have a love for contact sheets, right? You're a big contact
sheet
fan.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's interesting to you. We think that these people, I'm saying these people as a third party, but you know, when people see a picture on social media, say on Instagram, you tend to think, oh, there's that snapshot of, you know, this woman sitting by the pool in her bikini and like, oh, look at wonderful life. She probably just took 2 seconds to do that and put it up. But sometimes these people are doing this for, you know, a while to get it right. In some ways, they're basically shooting a few rolls of film and taking the best shot.
Wait a minute. Bill, are you saying that Instagrammers are like photographers?
Yeah, I'm saying that everyone's... No.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, what I find really interesting is that these people, A, actually admitted that it was harder than just taking a single shot. Mm-hmm. But also, they actually show how much they're working on a single picture for a stupid Instagram feed, you know? Which I...
Okay, well, okay, first
of all... I know there was
a
value in me saying stupid right there, but like...
Yep.
But it's not like these people are in the same way that you just said Instagrammers are just doing this. A lot of these people are just doing it to maintain whatever this brand is around themselves, you know, and then they're taking 400 pictures of them next or 200 plus pictures of them next to a horse in order to get just the right picture to show that they stood next to a horse.
Well, the horse is very particular. I mean, let's. You know, call it out. It wasn't the pictures of the girl were fine. It was the horse who insisted on the retakes.
The horse is like, no, let's go around again.
That's right. What are you trying to make an ass out of me?
Oh, hello. Is this the blue version of of the show?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, this is great. It's great to see
that it's
not just, you know, I've stepped off the corporate jet. Let me just snap this real quick on the way to my Bentley.
Hey, is a pretty little fawn with the horse. Is she holding a thing of perfume in her hand in that picture?
It looks like it is a perfume bottle. Let me go to, let's see. Yes. Okay. So this is Chloe Nomad. The hashtag that's in there. It is looks like it is a perfumery, a fragrance company. So yeah, this is a brand shot of some sort.
Ah, okay. Which changes it a little bit, right? Because then you're trying to show some lifestyle thing, but also kind of point out that you're next to a horse. So you know, it's a little bit more than just this is for me. She's
right.
Probably getting paid to hold this bottle of perfume.
Well, I think all of them have
good smell, like standing next to a horse.
Right. don't nag me about it, Bill.
God. Hey.
All of them seem to be some sort of brand or lifestyle focused feed.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
If you look at, look at the tags, American style. What is American style? What is that coming on? That could be clothing. It could be, it could be another type of brand. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's nice to kind of, anytime I can see process and peer behind the curtain and see what it takes to put something together, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Question is, do they delete all the other ones or do they keep, this is the thing about me and my phone. If I kept it all and let it all upload to my Dropbox and go up to wherever else my pictures back up to, right? And I had 35 pictures of me holding a cup of coffee or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about how much crap there would be in this folder full of pictures that you have, you know?
Right.
I wonder if they do this and then delete all the rest of them, you know, basically use it as scratch pad. Or if they
maybe
actually keep it like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it depends on at least partially. Are these sponsored? Are they paid for by the brand in question? By, you know, and do they require them to turn over any sort of originals or BTS? I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just thought you'd get like the idea that it's like a modern virtual contact sheet. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, I love seeing what goes into putting a shot together or a project together. It doesn't even have to be a photograph. It can be, you know, a song or a panel. That's one of the things I love about Song Exploder. And if you're not listening to the Song Exploder podcast, go subscribe. It's a terrific podcast. It's a fantastic breakdown of some artists that you've heard of, some artists that you've never heard of, but they break down a particular song and talk about, you know, how it came about, how they recorded it, you know.
Rishi K. Hirway.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a terrific, really a terrific podcast. I guess the thing that I'm, and this is why I put this in the show notes about Instagram being the barrier of entry. I've had a few conversations over the past week or so with different people about Instagram specifically, and social media at large, right?
Okay.
And this idea that you can be a mediocre photographer with an enormous Instagram following and probably be more commercially successful than a really good photographer with little or even no Instagram presence at all.
Is that your original thesis or is that where you came out at the end?
That's been my sort of thesis for a long time that, I know a few photographers, and I won't name them, but I know a few photographers who have lost out on clients or jobs because they went to somebody with a bigger footprint.
Right.
And it's led a couple people that I've talked to over the past week or so to think about, well, what does this mean? Should I buy followers so right. that when somebody does come to my feed, it looks like I've got this enormous following? Is that
how
where we're at?
How messed up is that?
Yeah, is that where we're at? The problem is that is, at least in this bubble of where we're at, that's a factor.
Yeah.
That you know, you spend a lot of time creating work, whether it's you know painting or writing or photographing or making short films and uploading them to YouTube, and you pour yourself into it, and it's met with a lukewarm response. It's met with negative commentary, whatever it is. And yet you think you're doing good work, but it goes maybe unnoticed because you don't have, you know, MKBHD's now 6 million followers.
But what is the answer to that?
I don't know what the answer is. It seems like, what is the answer? I don't know what the answer is. What I can tell you is that I've been coming up with a theory of sorts around process driven. And I think this give me a little bit of rope here, and I think it'll tie in.
Okay.
I'm really not interested in talking to middle management. I have no interest in talking to middle management.
Who would be middle management in what you're saying?
I mean, I don't know without, you know, I don't want to really sort of name names, okay. but those artists who are going, let's say, out of their way to show how talented they are, how wonderful they are, you know, I'm not interested in you trying to justify your own existence.
Right. But isn't that a lot of what these feeds and all this stuff is about?
To a certain degree, yeah.
Okay.
I'm more interested in the people trying to figure out their vision, trying to figure out their voice, trying to those people who are really working the program, as it were, and doing the work for the sake of doing the work.
Do you think that that is a little bit of a judgment on, say, I guess we don't have examples, but like the people that you're talking about, the middle management, as you put it.
Yep.
That you're making a value judgment on them. That is
absolutely. I'm 100% making a value judgment.
And you believe that that's fair, or do you think that you're just misunderstanding what they're accomplishing or the way they're trying to accomplish it?
I might be misunderstanding it, but on the other hand, it's my show and I get to talk to the people that I find interesting. That's who I'm approaching.
Sure.
And if I've seen interviews or read interviews or seen the work and it doesn't really inspire me or speak to me, then I'm sure there's somebody else out there that will want to talk to you.
Sure. No. Fine. I'm not. You sound dismissive of the other people in that equation.
It's not a matter of being dismissive. I think it's a matter of I'm interested in having honest conversations that are not. I don't want to talk to people who are just towing the line, who are telling the same stories over and over and over again. Okay. So if I go to the people who are really trying to find their voice and hungry and on their way up, as it were.
Right.
Or the people who are, let's say, at the top of the game, looking back on this amazing career and are willing and able to inspire others with their anecdotes, with their failures that they've overcome, or maybe some that they haven't. I think that's a more interesting conversation than somebody who's kind of in the middle and just interested in perpetuating their own story and their own sort of mythos.
See, it feels like you're conflating vulnerability with authenticity. Like that you assume that if somebody is still trying to figure it out or is looking back on it, that they have more that what they have to say is has more value.
And maybe that's true, but I have a limited amount of time.
Okay.
I have a limited amount of slots, as it were, that I can put these in.
Right.
And I have to make some sort of assessment on where to try and go.
Yeah.
And who to try and talk to, because I want this to be more than anything. I want the conversations to be interesting for those people who I'm talking to.
Right. Right. Okay.
Right. Yep. And if you are in this mode of you've been interviewed 20 times and by and large, you know, you're asked the same questions and you've got sort of your material.
Sure.
That's not interesting for you, and it's not interesting for a listener. Because we've heard it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, some people have heard it. Although, you know, as Merlin says, every day somebody's born who hasn't seen the Flintstones.
You know. That's true.
Which is
yeah, and it's again, I'm not trying to be dismissive, because I'm sure that there are interesting stories there. But I feel like at the polls, those stories are more interesting.
Do you know that that episode of The West Wing, Shibboleth?
No.
It's where the
Bill. I think it's pronounced Shibley.
It's when a bunch of Chinese Christian evangelicals stow away in a ship, and they land, and the president is trying to figure out if they're basically lying about their faith in order to have political asylum, like religious asylum in America.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them says that they sometimes are taught to feign faith, right?
Right. Okay.
And in some ways, I wonder if the way that you're looking at it, somebody could pull one over on you by feigning to be what you want them to be. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want them to be anything other than themselves.
Right. But I mean, but could somebody be like, oh, I'm going to talk the way Jeffrey wants me to talk, whether I actually believe it or not, and he'll buy into it because that's what he's looking for. That's the story he wants to tell. And in some ways, that is itself a sort of middle management kind of.
Maybe, yeah. But I tend to do, I tend to do diligence and I have sort of pre-call conversations with people.
Yeah.
As a means of both introduction to say hello, but to see what your cadence is like and what you'd like to talk about and what you're interested in. And
does that ever steal the thunder from the actual conversation, in the sense that like they'll say something or get into something just in the pre-call that you wish you were just like, oh, I wish this was the show.
It's happened a couple times, but not as a rule.
Okay.
You know, they're typically very general. You know, I want them to be, and this is the other thing, I want them to be conversations, not interviews. I don't want to go down the list and go, well, Mr. Wadman, here's question four.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at a certain level in your career, it's reassuring or it's comforting to sort of stick to those.
Sure.
Stories.
I've been interviewed more than a few times, and
yeah,
you know, there's stories you end up retelling or the same questions, and you have answers that you've worked out. Part of that is just because it's sometimes hard to come up with good answers to questions, and once you come up with a certain wording that works, you kind of stick with it. You know,
yeah, so there's definitely that element of it. That's not interesting for you to do that five times,
and it's not
interesting for me if I've listened to all five of them.
Yeah. I sometimes think about the people who are in the actors in those press junkets, you know, in the hotels where...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're getting the same 10 questions, and you've got to figure out a different way either to answer them differently.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just go, yeah, can we... I don't want to be a jerk, but... You know, I feel like I've answered this like 15 times. Can we go in a little different direction?
Yeah, and that's the clip that ends up on the news.
Right. Yeah. That's the right. Yeah, the person being, you know, just
Jeffrey Sidoris is a dick.
Right. 17 hours of press junket, and that's the one thing that makes the news.
Yeah.
So anyway, so back to this sort of social media thing.
Sure.
It's I think that we're in a very strange time because there is so much value placed on your footprint. And as you're trying to, I mean, look, if you're trying to make a living creatively, you've got enough to worry about, right? You're trying to figure out how to make work that is satisfying and maybe speaks to a particular audience. But now on top of that, you've got to worry about likes and follows and subs and unsubs and like all this other
stuff.
And
everyone yelling at you about having a consistent, you know, identity and a consistent story. I mean, look at the picture. One of the pictures in this article is the Steffi woman down the bottom. She's like, what does it say? She's like a mom, and she wears apparently orange all the time in these pictures. You know, but she has 223,000 followers, and it's just pictures of her wearing cute orange outfits.
Right.
You know,
you
know, and that's because that's what people want, right? They want consistency and they want, you know, whatever, all that stuff.
And, and to be, you know, she might be a lovely person to talk to.
Yeah.
But I would really struggle, I think.
You want to talk to Steffi on her way down.
What happened, Steffi? No, I think I would really struggle in making that satisfying for her as a conversation and interesting for you as a listener.
Sure. Okay.
Not that it couldn't be done. You know,
yeah.
And the other thing that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to have conversations that excite me, that interest me, that I am excited about doing the research, and I'm excited about, you know, finding, you know, some little thing about you or your work that I go, wow, I've never seen that before. I never heard that before. I find that really fascinating.
Wait, how many, what was the, when was the last process driven episode? Cause you did it in a batch, right? How long ago was
the
that?
The last one was last year. And it, I think the last one was Sean Tucker, who I just talked to this morning, actually. Hi, Sean. And then there, I've got three done, four more in the works, and two more that have responded but have yet to be three more responded that have yet to
so
be
are
scheduled.
You going to do you gonna do it as a big batch?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be every 2 weeks, or as one Englishman put it, fortnightly. Then
fortnightly.
Yes, fortnightly, which I love that.
Of course you do. Fortnightly.
Yeah, it's great, right? So I think they will be every 2 weeks. But I'm trying to give myself the benefit of the doubt because I know how I work. I'm trying to give myself every opportunity to see them through and succeed in posting them more consistently than just doing
so
one
having else. Them all in the hopper and then doing them as but I mean you're I'm assuming you're planning on doing a set and sort of ending a streak in 20 weeks or whatever it is. You'll do 10.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe 10 to 12 episodes and then take, you know, a couple of months away and go noodle on some new ones or maybe do a different project. But the idea that I don't have to scramble to get the next one done because a deadline is looming allows me to, I think, and I hope, do a better job at them. And not feel like, well, I've got to go find somebody to talk to. You know, I can right. I can take my time and you know, the there are four that are coming up that are people that I have just discovered in the last 6 months or a year and have just been blown away by their respective work and yeah. went, wow, I would love to talk to these people and I am absolutely humbled and grateful that each of them said yes.
And they're just like, yeah, we have a voice. We can speak. So sure.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, sure. yeah. And it's, you know, it's not a matter of being dismissive. I just, there's a feeling that I get that when I look at or listen to work that I can't really explain, but I just have a feeling that would make an interesting conversation.
Sure.
And by contrast, there is other work where I just go, that could be an interesting conversation, but I'm not immediately, it's sort of like looking at art. I'm not immediately drawn to it or affected by it. So there are enough people out there for whom I am drawn to or whose work I do resonate with. So I'd prefer not to dilute it.
Are you going to go with those people?
Yeah,
I get it.
So it wasn't meant to. If I am being dismissive, I apologize. It's not what I mean at all. It's just that I think that there are stories at the extremes that are more interesting than the stories in the middle.
Sure, that's fine.
There's no love in the middle, man. You either go high on price or you go low on volume.
Wait, no. You go high on price and high on volume.
Or high on volume, yeah.
Because
right.
if you're going high on price and low on volume, you're probably doing
meant.
The same thing.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Anyway, I just sound like an idiot now, so I'm going to stop.
Hey, before we get to our first advertiser of the day, I just wanted to mention that before I forget, because my brain is doing that. So Blackmagic put out this new camera a couple days ago. Did you see this thing?
Yeah, it's really okay, it sounds really dumb to say because I'm, you know, sort of whining about it, but it seems really big for a small camera.
Yeah, but I mean, considering what it's the equivalent of, it's not.
Yeah, it's sort of like a mini Ursa Mini, right?
Yeah, and it's got a 5-inch screen on the back, you know, which is a pretty darn big screen. So this is they put out, Blackmagic makes video hardware. A few years ago, they put out their pocket camera, which was this dinky little 1080p thing that was like the size of your phone that you could plug Micro Four Thirds lenses into, but it was a little tiny 16 millimeter size sensor.
Yeah, super 16.
Super 16 size sensor. that was a cool little camera, but it was plagued by some troubles. The battery life was pretty terrible, and you know, connectors were a little wonky because it was like a mini HDMI and all this kind of stuff. And it's been that way for a few years, but the footage out of it was pretty lovely. This new one, the new Blackmagic Cinema Camera 4K, is indeed bigger. It's like, what would you say is the size of? Like a 5D kind of thing, something like that?
Yeah, maybe. It looks like, it reminds me of one of the old Kodak cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the industrial design of it. I don't know why. I'd have to find a more accurate parallel, but it just has that feel. It's I don't know, unintentionally retro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And so it's got a full Micro Four Thirds 4K sensor, Micro Four Thirds lens mount. One of the cool things I thought was really neat was, okay, you can record to SD or CFast card, but it also has a USB-C connection on the side. You could plug in a USB-C SSD, and it'll record straight to the SSD.
Yeah, I watched the thing, and the guy was just like, okay, we're recording you. Here it is.
Yeah.
And he went over and plugged it into a MacBook, and I think it was a MacBook. Anyway, yeah, whatever.
And there's computer. The footage.
And there's the footage in DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's got all the other, you know, cool features. It's a touch screen on the back, and it's got
not a lot of money.
$1,299.
Yeah, it's less than the cost of a GH5 or GH5S.
Yeah, and it's got built-in. It's got XLR mic inputs.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's got features that are pretty amazing.
Now, I
full
wonder,
size HDMI, all this kind of.
How are the stills coming out of it? Have you heard anything?
Does it shoot stills?
It's supposed to. I mean,
it really?
It's the same sensor as the GH5.
Yeah, but I don't know that it shoots stills.
Huh.
I think it's video only.
Video only. Okay.
Which, I mean, it's a video camera. I don't, you know, it's not, you know, I think that it's meant to do that. Like if I, my camera doesn't shoot, well, it does shoot video, but the video is terrible on my Pentax. If I wanted to get a video camera because I wanted to do more video or whatever it is, this, I would totally consider this, you know, because I like the idea of a very specific, in the same way that you and I talk about the right tool for the right job, you know, very specific things.
Sure, sure.
It always feels like video tacked on to a stills camera or vice versa feels a little hacky. In like, I remember the first 5D, you know, oh, press this button, flip this switch, and then this is now record video. It's like, wait, this isn't a video camera. This is a stills camera. And obviously people made careers and lots of money on these cameras. So I'm not saying they're not capable, but it always felt weird the way it worked. You know, it was like, no, I want a video camera and I want a stills camera because they're kind of different things, you know.
They are, but the sort of the unicorn is one that will do both brilliantly, so that the photographer who has also been charged with shooting video for a particular client can flip the switch and do it, and then flip back and go to stills
for
or
events,
vice versa.
Things or whatever, it, absolutely. But I think for somebody who's, say, making a movie or whatever it is, the 5D never felt like the right tool.
Mm-hmm.
Where this, something like this could be, and for $1,295 or whatever it is, go buy some Micro Four Thirds lenses on eBay, you know, because there's got to be a lot of stuff out there, you know, kit
a
lenses
ton.
Of whatever it is.
Sure. And
for
if you're willing to use
$1,600, you know,
yeah, use adapted lenses, that market is even bigger.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. And along with it, they came out with their new version of DaVinci Resolve. Which DaVinci Resolve
15. Didn't they
just
come out with 14?
Yeah, 15 is out now.
Wow.
And Jeffrey, it's got their Fusion compositing stuff built into Resolve.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. It's like another...
that was an add-on.
Yeah, it was a whole other app. Now it's built in. You click on a clip, you click on the Fusion down the bottom, and you're in a Fusion thing with that clip. You can composite stuff, you can green screen, you can particle effects, you can text, like all that
kind
of stuff.
Is that in the free version?
Yep.
Shut up, really?
Yeah. Get out of town.
Get right out. Wow.
Yeah, like mega powerful.
Huh.
And they show it on a iMac Pro, so it's I'm kind of like, oh, it probably runs pretty well on an iMac Pro.
All right, so let's see. Spec-wise, let's look... 4/3 sensor, 13 stops at dynamic range, dual native ISO up to 25,600. So if listeners, if you are looking for a filmmaking camera, if you're predominantly a filmmaker and have been waffling over the GH5 or even the XH1, the Fuji, this might be a choice that you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, if you're planning on shooting video, I think that it's perfectly reasonable to consider getting a video-only camera. And for $1,000 or $1,200, it's not like you're paying five times as much to get a really good video-only camera. Mm-hmm. You're getting a tool for making movies, you know? I mean, just the power in that little thing, are you kidding me? It's insane. Anyway.
Yeah,
I want to put that out there. Yeah, Fusion will do rotoscoping, vector painting, 3D particle systems, keying, 3D compositing, tracking and stabilization, 2D and 3D tiles, and spline-based animation, so you can really control animations, all for free, Jeffrey.
Wow.
I guess they want you to buy the hardware, which, you know what? Hey, their hardware is good, too, so I don't mind.
The hardware are like the three-ball control panels, well, that kind of thing, the control surfaces? Oh, the hardware. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like, you know, they just want people using Blackmagic stuff. And, yeah, so anyway, I'm interested to try it because while Resolve 14 runs very well on this new machine of mine, I'm wondering if they even did more optimizations, you know, like with new GPU stuff.
So what's the difference between, because there's still a standalone Fusion. Is it for people who have older versions of the software, or why
yeah,
do they
probably.
Still do
it? Yeah, I think it's probably, you know, people who are still using it separate. They're not just going to pull it, you know. Maybe they will eventually. Hey, well, one other little thing. Do you see the news yesterday that new Mac, or last week, that the new Mac Pro is not coming this year?
Yes. Yeah.
Apple, come on.
What are you doing?
You pull a bunch of people in to tell them that there's going to be one coming, and then it's 2 years later before it actually comes out. Are you kidding me?
It's going to be over-designed.
Yep.
It's just put a cheese grater out with updated equipment. That's all it is.
Anybody who really wants a Mac Pro, that's what they want.
Yeah.
So why are you making something else? Anyway, makes me feel a little bit better about having bought this thing, you know, like not feeling like I'm going to get. Until I want to upgrade. Although I have a friend at NVIDIA now, so I could probably get a GPU to put in the back of this thing. All right. Let's talk about our first sponsor of the week. We got a new sponsor, Jeffrey.
We'll see what they mean. Remember?
Yeah, can you, I'm not sure if you can read this. I think you need to put your contacts in.
I can't do contacts. I don't like putting things in my eyes.
Yeah, some people have that thing. Some people don't like the little divots on the side of their nose from glasses, though. So,
you know, I'll take a divot over. Come on, you know me. Are you really going to trust me to put my own fingers near my eyes? Come on.
I don't trust you for anything, so. Hey, our sponsor today is Simple Contacts. It's a convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care simplified, Jeffrey. Need to renew your prescription? Take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed 1-year prescription and reorder your contacts. Have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo in your doctor's name and we'll order your lenses. That's pretty cool. They'll like contact your doctor and get it worked. Simple Contacts offers convenience. You get renewed prescription, reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. No more doctor's visits or waiting rooms. The vision test itself, it's fast. So the vision test itself is self-guided, takes less than 5 minutes. Think of how much time you could save compared to making an appointment, getting to the eye doctor, taking time off, etc. Reliability is designed by doctors and licensed ophthalmologists. Review every test carefully to make sure your eyes look healthy and that your vision hasn't changed. They give you choice. So Simple Contacts offers all brands of lenses that you're familiar with, including options for astigmatism, multifocal lenses, colored contacts, and more. Man, imagine the optics involved.
Wait
in
a minute.
Multifocal.
You can get a bifocal contact lens?
Yeah.
Wow.
Simple Contacts customer support ensures that every customer is 100% satisfied. You get text updates on your order, and you can ask questions or reorder via text at any time. Plus, the best part, Jeffrey, savings. The vision test is only $20. Compare that to an annual appointment, which without insurance could cost you over $200. The contacts lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. Best of all, we're offering a promotion to our listeners. These listeners of On Taking Pictures, Jeffrey.
That's you. Yep. That's you, people.
Just a reminder that this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but you can get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/OTP or enter OTP at checkout. That's simplecontacts/OTP or enter OTP at checkout for $30 off. So we thank them very
I'm looking
much.
At this right now. Go ahead.
Are you
sorry,
taking
go
your
ahead,
test? You're going to go
no,
take
go
your
ahead.
Test?
No.
Because if you want to take your test, you can totally do that.
No. Go ahead and thank them. Sorry. Thank you, Simple Contacts. Sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you, Simple Contacts, for supporting 5x5 and on taking pictures.
I'm just looking at the thing. Multifocal contacts exist in both soft and firm materials. That is amazing.
That's what she said.
That. Oh, man. What do you... All of you Me Too listeners, it's Bill at ontakingpictures.com.
Yeah, that's a...
How do they even do that?
I think they do it maybe around the edge, because then maybe the up and down and left and right. No.
But your eye...
How do they orientate it in your eye?
Yeah, your eye is moving over the surface. Like, how? That's amazing. All right. That's really cool. Anyway, moving on. That's
technology,
super
man.
Multifocal contact lenses. Who knew?
It's pretty cool.
I'm more excited about that than anything Nikon's released in the past year.
It's pretty true, though, right?
Yeah, it kind of is. Although, apparently, they're doubling down on mirrorless.
Nikon?
Yeah. So is Canon.
Yeah, I mean, both of them feel like they're missing out on whatever boat is leaving the harbor, I guess. Their sales are going down. People aren't buying 43 cameras anymore, you know?
You're telling me. I haven't even bought one.
<Ba-dum-psh>.
All right,
one of these days you're gonna buy a camera and people are just gonna, the world's gonna implode or something. It's
right.
gonna, yeah. I have constant lights in here, so
I will buy a camera.
One of these days or soon.
Soon
and for the rest of my life.
That's right. Constant lights.
Okay,
what is that?
So I'm down. So I go down. I was in Monterey, California.
Right.
And I'm at the aquarium.
You got to tell the Leica M6 guy story.
Oh, yeah. So
Bill calls me, dude. And he tells me the following story.
So before I leave for California last Saturday, I'm at a friend's birthday party at a bar here in Brooklyn. And I had my camera with me because I was getting on a flight in 4 hours and I wanted to, take that day's picture before I left. And so there's this guy standing by the bar. And so I walk up to him. I say, excuse me, my name's Bill, whatever, nice camera, because he had an M6 around his neck. And it turns out the guy says, oh, thanks. And I said, oh, what's your name? And we got talking. His name was Matt. I said, I do this thing. Do you mind being my subject for this? He's like, yeah, no problem. So he finishes his beer. And 20 minutes later, I get him up and we're walking over to the bar.
Was he
hammered? Sitting down with his, no, I mean, he was sitting down with his, his girlfriend or wife.
Okay. I wheel him out to the front.
Yeah, he's like, this is really great.
Oh, I'd love to take a picture. Yeah.
Who are you again?
Yeah.
So I take him over there and I'm talking about it and all this. And he said, you've been doing this for a while? And I said, yeah, I'm a year and a half. And he goes, do you have a podcast? And I said, yeah. He's like, what's it called? I said, I'm taking pictures. He goes, yeah, I listen to you guys.
Nice. Nice. Hi, Matt. Thanks,
hi, Matt.
Matt
Barber.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah. In fact, yeah. I met up with a listener out in California too. Got a nice little, I don't want to say too much because, let's just say that I had two nice lunches and rode in a Tesla and had a little tour of NVIDIA. So
nice.
It was pretty cool. Very, very cool. So I have to go shoot at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is, the Nemo fish thing, that's where.
But
Finding
come on,
Dory is.
Was I,
is that what
was
it's
I right? It's a beautiful structure, right? I mean, it's a beautiful museum.
It's like brutalist, like that classic sort of thing, right? So, I get an email the day before I'm going to leave, and they say, "Okay, yeah, just one thing: no strobes inside next to the tanks."
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, but it changes my world a lot. Right. Because I imagine it's pretty dark in there, which it was. And I don't own constant lights. and I'm going to a town that's not exactly, you know, lighting rental city, you know? So I get out there and the Godox, the big Godox light that I bought has a pretty bright LED modeling light that I was like, okay, worst case scenario, I have this, right, as like a tool. But I don't think this is going to do it, and that's only one light, and I don't know what else I'm going to do. And I'm freaking out a little bit. And I get out there, and I go scope the place out the day before, and it's really dark, like 80th of a second, f4 at 1600 ISO, and that's just to get the windows to be at all showing up. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of light coming down through the water, and I got to light somebody in front of it. So I'm like, oh my god, what am I going to do? So there are two local places that theoretically could help me. Both of them, the first one turned out to be more of a rental place for, you know, like if you were going to have a event and you had like stage lighting, you know, like those,
sure,
laser things, and you know what I mean, all that kind of stuff, for like weddings and that kind of thing. Not exactly what I need,
right?
You know?
Yeah, I'm not making laserium here,
right?
Somebody flip on the Pink Floyd, let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. And then so that was no good. There was another place that I found online. It had an address. And so I sent an email but didn't hear back. So I just went to the address figuring, oh, like if they're a regular place, it's Monday afternoon, they'll be open. So I get to this building that has no windows. No doors.
That's right.
It had like a...
You had to find a way out.
It had a... can you find a link to that so people can know what we're talking about? So it was this building with sort of a courtyard. So there was a bunch of different businesses in this weird... It's very California. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm walking around and I was like, hey, guys, I'm looking for Monterey light and rigging or something. And they were just like, yeah, I've never heard of it. I don't know what you're talking about. It's like, ugh. And they're like, well, maybe those guys over there know. So I go into this place and I'm talking to this woman. And I was like, excuse me, do you know where this is? I'm trying to find this thing. And she goes, no, I don't. She's like, I've been here for 10 years and I've never heard of this place. So maybe it's like a super old website and the place is gone or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she says, but we do some photo stuff and we have lights. So I go in the back room and I meet this guy. And he's just like, he's like this big sort of muscle, like a weightlifter guy who apparently does photo and video shoots for them. And he's got like this, you know, home built, like hot rodded glass front, PC case, you know, like with
nice.
like a GTX 1080 in it.
All liquid cooled and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. And he's like, hey brother, like, yeah, we got these things over here. And he had these, 2 foot by 10 inch fluorescent things. You know what I'm talking about?
Like Kino flows? Like that
yeah,
kind
like,
of thing?
Like a cheap Kino flow. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's just like, we've got three of them and, you know, stands and this big 5-in-1 diffuser. And like, if you need them, like we can make a deal. Like how much, like what will you give us to borrow them for? Like they were just ready to give
them.
How
much do you have in your pockets?
Yeah. Right. So I'm just thinking if I went to some other place and I would have spent a couple $100 or whatever it is renting crap for the day, you know? So I said, how about $100? And they were like, yeah, sure. And so they took down my credit card number and just let me walk out the door with these lights. And so I took them and luckily I had packed big rolls of half CTO, quarter CTO, half CTB and add green. Like I had some gels with me.
Were they big enough though to handle these kind? I mean, because
So I bought full sheets the other on my way out before I left, and I cut like 4 inches off one end just so they'd fit in my Pelican case rolled up. But yeah, they covered the fronts, like whew, you know, like lucky, right? Like give me something to mop my brow, kind of thing. So I ended up using them with the they have like barn door reflectors on the side, so I turned them in like a little box and put the gels in the taped the gels to the front and use these constant lights. And I bring it up just because so many of us who use flashes all the time, strobes, I mean, you get really good spectrum from a strobe. You know what I mean? Like skin right. tones look really good and all that kind of stuff. But there's something almost eerie about shooting with constant lights because it's like shooting you know, it's WYSIWYG, right? You like what you're seeing is actually what you're going to get on the film or whatever, which is just so different than shooting with strobes. And, you know, you kind of know what it looks like, but what it looks like in reality and what it looks like on the camera are two different things, you know.
But you've got mixed light sources in this situation, right? You've got daylight coming through and the fluorescence?
Well, you have daylight coming in through the tank is what you mean, right? The fluorescence were daylight balanced. So what I did was I warmed up the one that was going to be hitting her and then cooled down the shadow side of her. So that one had like a little, like a half CTB and a little ad green.
And are you shooting in daylight or are you shooting in tungsten?
Okay. So, well, that's the thing. I shot raw, so I have options, but what this allows me to do right, like out of camera, I think I shot daylight. So out of camera, the water's blue and she's a little orange.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing about that is that if I shift her towards more natural, that water's only going to get more blue.
Right. Doesn't she have some blue on her shadow side then?
Yes.
Because of the add green?
Right. So yeah. I wanted her shadow side to be a little cooler. So it has like a little bit of like a, there's a little bit of a temperature difference between the two sides of her. Mm-hmm. It just gives a little more dimensionality to the image, which is what I was going for. But it totally worked. And apparently I think that these lights were on Amazon for like $80 a piece. You know what I mean? I don't think they were not fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a car, it's a pain in the ass to carry them around, right? Like it's not the kind of thing that, the nice thing about strobes is that I can carry a thing that weighs 3 pounds that can give me the amount of light that a 2K big giant can light would give me.
Right.
You know?
Could you have gotten what you wanted out of one of those little LED panels, or is that not enough light for you?
It wasn't. Well, that's the thing. So these are fluorescent. So they had like two switches. So it would turn on two of the bulbs and then the other two bulbs, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you could turn mm-hmm. half or all of them. And when I took it back to my hotel, I had done tests that day and shot at, say, 1600, like I was saying. And I turned them on in my hotel room and I was like, holy crap, that's bright. Is this too much? And then I'm thinking, how do I deaden this down if I need to, you know? And I had pieces of tissue paper between the gels when I bought them. You know, they stuck them.
Yeah, sure.
So I was like, okay, I could always layer up tissue paper in front of the gel or behind the gel to like deaden it down and turn it into like a little softbox.
Right.
So that was always sort of my thing. So I was walking in thinking, oh man, is this going to be way too much light? But because it's so dark in there and because it's like concrete and dark floor and all the rest of it, it's not like there's
it just sucks up any reflected light.
Yeah. So having the lights, you know, 5-6 feet away from her. Oh, the other thing you got to remember is that it's all glass behind her. So now you got to worry about the reflections in the glass too, right? So you got to It was a tricky shoot, but it was just kind of, it was really interesting using hot lights. Not that I'd want to do it all the time, but I feel like I've sort of lost my virginity of using hot lights on a shoot, you know, a little bit.
Right.
Like, okay, yeah, if I had to do this, I feel comfortable doing this. Although I'm still shooting at 800 or 1600, which I know on modern cameras is fine, but it's not like you get the massive dynamic range you get at ISO 100 or 200 on one of these cameras. So yeah, I thought people would get a kick out of that.
Hold on, before you move on. How do you think that shoot would have gone in terms of time and prep using strobes because of the glass and the bounce and the reflections and all that? Do you think it would have turned out as well in retrospect?
I think if I had shot it with strobes and I had the same amount of time and I had like all the stuff that I wanted to bring modifier-wise, I would probably have more control over the light as strobes, because I could use grids and I could use, you know, soft boxes and that kind of stuff. This was sort of, I'm just spilling light out and turning it away from her a little bit to try to kill the reflections and also get her feathered a little bit and all that kind of stuff. So it's like a little tricky trying to do that. Just part of it might be just cause I haven't used them. And actually we tried, I had my assistant for the show, for the shoot, Nick Curry, who's like a local newspaper guy who's great. And he slummed it and helped me out the other day because I needed somebody who knew the area.
Thanks, Nick.
He was great, but he had some of those like a speed light stand, you know, with like the bracket to hold a speed light and an umbrella, like an umbrella bracket.
Oh, like the little knuckle kind of thing with the hole through it? Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
I thought the other option was, okay, if this thing is way too bright, he had a couple like 48-inch shoot-through umbrellas. What if we just stick one of those on a stand in front of the light and sort of double diffuse it? You know what I mean? Like so basically use it, use the shoot-through umbrella, like a shoot-through umbrella, just with a fluorescent light behind it.
Right.
So that was another option too, which would spread things out a little bit. So, but I don't feel like I had the same control over modifiers that I would have liked. I would have liked to have like little spot sort of grid and that kind of stuff. And you can't do that kind of stuff with hot lights. Well, you can, but just not the hot lights I had.
Will this change your travel kit in any way as a result of this? I mean, will you start packing differently or pick up new types of gear?
Well, I think that it makes it so that in odd situations like this that I'm sort of put into a corner, kind of, you know, that I will feel more comfortable and sort of know what I'm doing, you know. And I was shooting on a tripod too, which helped, because, you know, for that kind of thing, it's so dark that I had to really slow down the shutter speed in order to. But the files look pretty good, so there's that, you know. Anyway, so yeah, it was a good experience. I just thought that for those people who are big flash people, like a lot of us are, it was really interesting. And I think if you really wanted to, these were fluorescent ones, but LEDs would be similar kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky that.
About those little Godox things that we were talking about a few weeks ago? Would that have been enough power?
Well, so I brought my Godox 600, the big Godox.
Mm-hmm.
So that the modeling light on it would have been bright enough. Like if that's all I had in a pinch, I could have made it work for one side. But it wasn't the kind of thing it wasn't going to give me as much light as these things gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
spread them out, right? So it was like a 2 foot by 1 foot. It was like a 2 square foot source versus a little tiny source, you know?
Yeah, right.
So there's that as well. But I'll tell you, so the second half of the story actually involves the Godox. So before we came inside and shot with the thing, we were down, there's like this tide pool, you know, outside.
Yeah, sure.
So I wanted to shoot the subject in this tide pool, them on a rock, me on a rock, like shooting out towards the ocean.
Right.
And it was 8 a.m.
Hold on, back up 1 sec.
Yep.
For those of you who don't know Monterey Bay Aquarium, it sits right on the Pacific Ocean, and there's an interior exterior component to it, so you're looking, I mean, literally out over the ocean. You're right there.
Yeah. So it was high tide, which was not ideal for me, but I have my slot, right? So I can't, you know, do anything about that.
Yeah. Can we hang out for 4 hours while
exactly. Yeah. So you know, you got to do what you got to do. So we get there early and we go down, and now I'm thinking, okay, I want to shoot out on those rocks. Now, somebody has taken that picture of her before, but I didn't. It was fine, but I think I could have done it better. So I was like, okay, I want to give that a shot down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got my Godox light, and I've got the cactus triggers that I bought a few weeks ago, which allow me to do a high-speed sync with the Godox, which is amazing because the sun is at, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the shot when you're looking out from the rocks out into the ocean, and it's 8 a.m. So the sun's, you know, in the shot. So I don't want the sky completely blown out. So I'm exposing for the sky, but if on my camera where the natural sync speed is only 125th of a second, I'm stopped down to F16 or F18. It's like, well, that's unacceptable. You know, like that's not going to work. So, because I don't have enough strobe power, and then I'm just so much depth of field, I just lose any sense of that. So you get a couple of these little cactus things and the Godox, and I have it up through a shoot-through umbrella. So Nick is on one rock with the umbrella kind of tipped down over her a little bit, and I'm shooting from another rock, and we're taking these pictures. I'm shooting at 1/3000th of a second at like F5 or something like that, you know? So there's still some, I mean, I'm
still
getting
still at 200
focus.
ISO?
100 or ISO.
100 ISO rather?
Yeah, all the way down.
Wow.
And then at 1/3000th of a second or whatever it is, and this Godox flash is doing high speed sync, so it looks like that look that you get when things are out of, you know what I mean, where you're using a strobe outside
high
speed. So that was really cool. So before she gets there, I'm just walking around the rocks trying to figure things out. So these rocks are slippery. It's tricky. I've got my camera and I've got the 35 on it, which is like a wide, like a 28, right? And then in my pocket, I had my 55, which is sort of my bread and butter normal lens, which is the one that I was going to put on while we were shooting. So it's all very calm. And I'm thinking, okay, if I'm down there on a rock, the last thing I want to have to do is flip caps around. You know what I mean? Like it, right? Because Nick's, right. Nick's got the light. I can't be like juggling my camera and two lenses and the caps, right? So I take the caps off my 55 and I stick it in my blazer pocket. I have this like army kind of like green blazer thing that I have, right? So I stick it in my pocket and I go down there and I'm just scoping things out thinking, oh, maybe this rock, maybe that rock. And there's like this diver guy down there who has to be down there for safety reasons and whatever. But it's not like deep or whatever. If I fell in, I'm, you know, up to my thighs in water, right? But I'm walking on these edge rocks and out of nowhere, Jeffrey, I get covered in water. My right shoe is soaked and water splashes up on me, including my left jacket pocket. So it wasn't that much water. And
well, it doesn't take that much water.
Right. It wasn't that much water. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like my jacket's now damp a little bit. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I got pummeled. It just sort of, you know, spray.
Right.
So I'm shooting the subjects. I'm chatting and doing my thing and snap, 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 snap. Okay. Hey, yeah, let's go to the 55. Put the 55 on. And the aperture reading says dash dash.
Which is code for I don't like water.
Yeah. The irony of it is that the 55 is a weatherproof lens when it's on the camera.
Right. Yeah. Operative words on the camera.
And if I had had the caps
the
on.
Caps on. Yeah.
Right. So I made a Billy, what's
the lesson here?
Yeah. Right. But at the same time, had I had the caps on, I probably would have dropped it in the process of, you know what I mean? It was like a little bit of a catch 22.
So basically somebody needs to make lashable silicone rear caps that you can pop off with one finger, one thumb, and then just slap them back on without having to turn them. They just need to be.
These exist?
I don't know. Do they not exist? If they don't, they should. If they don't, then I just gave somebody a great idea.
Yeah. Well, so I'm figuring like, okay, is this thing totally dead or is it just sort of like damp or whatever it is? You know what I mean? Like if the contacts are wet or something like that. So I end up shooting the whole thing wide and with my longer new macro lens, and I don't have the middle lens, which stinks because it would have been great for certain shots and whatever. This is one of those situations where this happens. You put the thing on the camera, it says dash dash, and you can't show that you're scared, right? You know what I mean? You can't be like, oh my God, my lens, because you're in the middle of a shoot. This is like, you got to move on, right? So, okay, take it off, put the wide back on, keep moving, you know, deal with it later. And I tried it again later, still didn't work. And then when I finished the shoot, I drive back up to San Jose. I have lunch. I go to the Winchester Mystery House for a quick drop by because I've never been. And then I still got like 4 hours to kill. And I'm sitting at a Panera having some soup. And I was thinking, huh, I wonder if anybody sells silica gel. You know, the little packets of the stuff that dries crap out. And I'm like, I'm across the street from a Fry's. Fry's has to sell silica gel packets, right? You know, you think. Nope. I go to Staples. Nope. Office Max. Nope. Michael's Arts and Crafts, you know, those places. They do sell silica gel, but only in these sand-like grain stuff that you're supposed to pour over flowers.
Right.
And I couldn't figure out any way to do that without just getting that stuff in the lens. You know what I mean? Like I didn't. So, cause I didn't have any way to pack it.
So why do you not just have silica gel at home? Why don't you just buy yourself, I mean, like a box of 100 or whatever packets?
Okay. So I bought one, a company, it's like Goddard or one of those companies. I forget what the name of the thing is. Where it's actually like a little metal box that has silica in it and it's reusable. So you can use it and then you stick it in the oven for 30 minutes at 300 degrees and it evaporates the water and you can use it again.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I ordered one. It's coming tomorrow. But I was just surprised that in the center of Silicon Valley, I couldn't find stuff that cleans water, like pulls water off electronics, you know?
Yeah, it does seem kind of odd.
Yeah. So my 55 is fudged and it's one of those frustrating things because I bought it for $450 used and my insurance deductible is $500. So it's like, don't.
So what do you, are you going to replace it with the same thing? What do you do?
Yeah, I love, I mean, this is my favorite lens for this camera, so it's kind of stinks. I'm gonna get the Silica thing tomorrow. I'm going to give it a shot. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, I'm out $10. You know what I mean? It's not the end of the world.
Well, and then you have the
and then
silica
I have the thing
for
some
time.
Other time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was so frustrating because I was like, oh, I just screwed this up, you know? Anyway, I leave. I bring the lights back to the place that I rented them, and they're like, all right, thanks. I'll charge you $100 to your credit card. I was like, this is so weird. So anyway, just some stories from the road. This is the life of the working photographer. This is
right.
This is the crap that you have to deal with, guys.
But you know what? You're getting paid to do something that sometimes you love.
Oh, I am in no way. I'm not complaining about any. You know, it's, you know, I was telling you right before the show, I had time after I did walked around the aquarium on Monday. I got in my car and I drove down to Big Sur.
Yeah.
And what is the highway called right north of there? What is that area called?
I think it's just 101.
Yeah. But I mean, is that area of 101 called something specific? Like with all the cliffs and the, you know, the big bridges and all that stuff?
I don't think so.
Okay. So anyway, I'm driving between, say, Carmel and Big Sur, and my God, it is beautiful. And I'm listening to the new album by, or not the new, but the Bon Iver most recent record. And kind of blasting it and driving these windy roads like...
Oh, it's on the 1, not the 101. Okay, so...
No, isn't it the 101?
Well, it's if you're going on the coast, it's the 1.
Oh, okay, then... It's
PCH.
Right. Yeah, okay, so yeah, then it was the 1, right. Yep. That's exactly what it was. Yeah,
so
like
you should
Notley's
have been listening
landing.
To Death Cab for Cutie because you went by the Bixby Canyon Bridge.
Yes. Okay. So yes, that I went by there. I took some pictures there, and where I shot the other guy was a little bit north of there, like Notley's Landing. If you see that on the
Notley's Landing, sure.
Yeah. So like that area. But wow, that area was unbelievable. So yeah, look, I got paid to basically go take that drive down that thing, right? You know, it's pretty cool. So anyway,
yeah.
And thus end of the story. I just thought you'd get a kick out of the hot lights thing and the forking my lens thing.
Yeah, bummer about the lens.
God, it just sucks. Yeah. See, the only thing is, Jeffrey, is if I had the 35 in my pocket and got splashed while the 55 was on the camera, that would have been fine, and the 35 is actually a much more expensive lens. So if I had to sacrifice one lens to the gods of the ocean, you know?
Right.
It was the right one.
Yeah. Poseidon giveth and Poseidon taketh away.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah. All right, one more quick sponsor.
Right, and welcome
Jeffrey,
guess
back. Who's back. Yeah,
Jiggity FreshBooks.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Let me take a sip of this LaCroix Pamplemousse. They're not advertising. I'm not gonna say that. Jeffrey, you know what you've been missing?
Way to do my accounting simply and easily online without hassle.
You know, you've been missing that 192 hours a year of your precious time.
That was going to be my second one.
Our friends at FreshBooks make ridiculously easy cloud accounting software that lets freelancers and people of all stripes do their accounting easily, simply, quickly, and get paid quickly, which is the most important thing. They simplify tasks like invoicing, tracking expenses, and getting paid online. FreshBooks has drastically reduced the time it takes for over 10 million people to deal with their business paperwork. You can send clean, professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds, Jeffrey. It's very, very simple. With two clicks of your mouse, you can set yourself up to receive payments online. Two clicks of your mouse. Does anybody use a mouse anymore?
I use a mouse.
Are you a mouse guy?
Yes.
I don't think I knew that. Okay.
Yeah, for day-to-day operations, I use my mouse. And then when I'm doing, Affinity Designer or Affinity Photo or something, I use my tablet.
Oh, okay. You can take pictures of your receipts on your phone using the FreshBooks mobile app, and it makes claiming your expenses a million times easier. FreshBooks has been completely redesigned from the ground up and custom built for the way that you work. Get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid quickly. With their new projects feature, you can share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. See how quickly things happen when all your conversations live in one place. The new notification center is like your personal assistant. You'll always know what's changed in your business since you last logged on and what needs to be dealt with pronto, like overdue invoices. Speaking of overdue invoices, Jeffrey, they got late payment reminders that FreshBooks helps you avoid having to have that awkward conversation with your client about past due payments. FreshBooks automatically lets them know and sends them an email and says, hey, you haven't paid Sidoris yet. And the people
I think we need to get that.
Working as a freelancer means your clients can be all over the world. So FreshBooks lets you send invoices in the currency your clients work in, which spares everyone the time and hassle of currency conversions. And of course, if you have any questions whatsoever, FreshBooks' award-winning customer service is amazingly helpful, super friendly, and they have zero attitude. Plus, a real live person usually answers in three rings or less. If you're listening to this and you're not using FreshBooks yet, now would be the time to try. FreshBooks is offering an unrestricted 30-day free trial for all of our listeners. No credit card required. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com, enter on taking pictures in the How Did You Hear From Us section, and you'll be helping the show and 5x5 and Jeffrey.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. So if you've got a, you know, $130,000 check you need to write,
you can send it to Sidoris. He's got nothing. He's got nothing.
Nothing going on. Whatever.
He's waiting to go to the bank with that check. He's just sitting around.
With your check. That's right.
Do you want me to insert that audio?
If you want to. Yeah, if you want to.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Mike in Georgia. The reason I'm calling is I had a question for Ask OTP, and that is, does what I'm about to describe ever happen to you? I'm out shooting, and whether it's something I planned or whatever, I feel pretty good about looking at the back of the camera. Everything looks all right. You know, I'm actually kind of excited. And then I get home and load the stuff into my computer and look at it on the screen, and then I go into a deep state of depression. The stuff sucks. It's shit. And, you know, I don't know. And then if I give it a few days and I come back and look at it, it's like, well, I guess it's not that bad. Maybe it's okay. So I don't know. Has that ever happened to you? And how do you get past that? Because I know that's not helpful. Anyway, love the podcast. Love you guys. Hope you're having a good one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yes, I think this has happened to both of us. And I think that there's two layers to this. There's the simple sort of 20-second technical answer, which is, you know, I when I'm taking pictures, I have it so that if they look good on my camera, if they look good on the back of the camera, I think they're going to look really good on a computer. Like I trust the camera in such that I know that if it looks good there, then it's going to look really good later. You know what I mean? Like sort of the preview that I get. It's a little bit like being in a studio and using crappy Yamaha NS10 monitors, which are these really crappy speakers with a white cone that everyone used in studios. Because if you can make it sound good on an NS10, it'll sound good on anything. So it's a little bit like that, right? So there's expectations you have, technical expectations. Mm-hmm. But the bigger question, I think, is this larger thing of what your expectations for your own work are and why you're disappointed when you come look at it at home. You know what I mean?
Well, or maybe the situation was such that you've been into, okay, let's say for you on this trip to Monterey Bay, you wanted to go to Point Lobos. Or you wanted to shoot that sort of iconic tree that's out over the ocean, and you get there and you get your camera set up, but for whatever reason you can't look right at the back of the camera while you're shooting, and you go back to the hotel and you, oh man,
yeah,
well that's not what I wanted. Yeah, that's not what I wanted. But then maybe you get home, not just back to the hotel. Maybe you get home, and you go, well, you know what? I shot this in RAW. I've got some latitude. I can do this. I can do that. I can do the other. Okay. Not exactly what I wanted, but not a horrible photograph either.
Do you think, though, that there's some element of, I'm going to use this word, and I don't know if it's the right word, but for lack of a better word, there's a level of maturity that comes with not getting too excited, but also not underselling yourself. You see what I'm saying? That it's like your first time at Disneyland, or, you know, your first time, I don't know, kissing a girl or something like that, where you're so excited about kissing the girl that you like are not taking it for what it is, and you're building it up too much, and then you're beating yourself too much afterwards. You know what I mean? Like you're oscillating too much past the reality.
I don't know if it's a maturity thing. I think it's just people approach the work differently, and people put different amounts of weight on the outcome. You know, for a number of people, how good or bad the photograph is, in this case, may have little or nothing to do with technically how good or bad the photograph is. It has everything to do with the experience of making the photograph and getting, you know, maybe you had to rent a car and the car broke down and, yep. and you had to get towed and then you had to find a ride. But by the time you finally got there, by God, you were not going to leave Southern California without getting, or, you know, Central California, without getting this picture, and you got it. And yeah. it doesn't matter that it's, that the wind is coming from the wrong direction, or that the light, you got there late in the day, so the shadows are all skewed. It doesn't matter, because by God, the experience of getting that photograph was worth it.
Yes. And that comes down to the experience, which you and I like to say. And I think that that is totally true of, that the experience of taking that picture is obviously worth as much as the picture itself in many ways, you know. I took a picture of a guy on the shore the other day, this older Asian gentleman who had his camera set up on a tripod. It was my 365 the other day, and this beautiful vista that he was taking a picture of, you know, and you sit
yeah,
there and you
kind
go,
of on the kind of on the bluff overlooking yeah. the ocean. Yeah, it's, I saw like, that terrific
it's like,
picture.
It's like, thank you. It's, but it's like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? Like, how beautiful could that place be? Like, remove him, and that's a beautiful picture. It's, but I think it's cool with a minute, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, me meeting this guy, his name is Hung Vu, and just talking to him for a minute about, he was using neutral density lenses and filters and that kind of stuff,
right?
And trying to get past a little bit of language barrier that he and I had. But we had the common language of art, man, of photography.
But
I will remember.
I know you jest, but there is something to that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. And but I, in some ways, I think that that experience of talking to him, I'm going to remember long past remembering this picture.
You know? I would say that's true,
and yeah. I like this picture. So it's sort of a, you know, it's like a, okay, that's pretty cool. But I think that there is something about the more you shoot, the more you shoot. I mean, there's plenty of times that I come home and I look at the pictures and I'm disappointed in them. Hopefully not for any weird technical reason, like, oh man, my focus is way off or something like that. But more from a just artistic compositional, I miss that, you know, like that could have been better. That happens sometimes. Less now, not because I'm necessarily a better photographer, but just because I've lowered my standards.
Nice. if it's sort of sharp and the subject is somewhat in the picture, it's a win.
Yeah. You know what I've noticed lately? This is here's a little insight into my reality. This is the thing that I'm obsessing with lately. Is sometimes I've been shooting portrait pictures, as in, you know, rotated portrait landscape, you know, portrait.
Right. Portrait format.
Yeah. Up and down, vertical. And a lot of times I'll put the camera to my eye and I'll be taking pictures and I come home and I look at them and I'm like, that's tilted. The horizon's tilted like 3 degrees, right? Which is not something that you can't fix later, but you're losing some of your image doing that. You know what I mean? Like to correct that. And I'm just like, why don't I think about the horizon more when I take pictures? Like, this is the thing I'm obsessing on now, is like, make sure your camera's straight. So
yeah, but if you're that, on the other side of that, if you're looking at the horizon, are you looking at the expression of your subject?
Well, right. But in some ways, I need to look at both, or I need
shoot on a tripod.
Right. Which I whenever I shoot on a tripod, I shoot, and then I go, get this damn thing out of my way. I need to move the camera.
What about a monopod? Like with one of the ball, like the Manfrotto monopods little ball feet on it. So you can move it, you know, left and right.
I think what I just need to do is I have to get it so that I have to internalize the horizon so that that becomes a mistake that I don't make, but I also don't have to think about it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I don't screw up focus that much. I've internalized, like, I automatically am recomposing and focusing and doing this, that, and the other thing. I don't even think about it. That's like a tick that I have, right? So I need to have my Horizon thing be the same way so that it's no longer an issue. It's just an issue that I've been noticing lately that I need to work on. So, you know, we all have things we need to work on. But I don't come home and go, oh, man, I screwed it up because that one's a little tilted. I'll kick myself a little bit, but not too much. You know, I'll just be like, no, I got to fix that next time. I got to do that better. But yes, the answer is, I think we all feel that way.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
What was the other one that you had?
Ben Rice. Hi, Ben. How are you? Will we still be arguing over, or will we be arguing, not still be, but will we be arguing over computational versus optical photography in 10, 15, 20 years' time, the way we do film and digital?
Yeah, if computational photography people will say, oh, yeah, the computer's doing the picture. You're not doing the picture.
Right.
It's actually a similar dichotomy.
Yeah, but I don't care whether you shoot film or digital. And I don't.
Well,
think
you
that
don't. But then you just two 3 weeks ago you talked for an hour about how Sally Mann's use of wet plate changes the way you see the images.
It does, but I don't personally care. I have no interest or opinion of whether you should shoot one or the other. I don't care. Shoot whatever
right,
you like.
Right. Yeah.
I care what I want to shoot. And it's, you know, that's an extreme example. I think if you shot, I mean, let's be honest, if you went out and shot with, let's say, Portra 400, right? Or Acros,
right?
And you shot digitally and you know, applied some sort of color curve or preset or whatever,
you could get
and
those
printed
two
out
close.
Yeah, printed out those two pictures. I think 8 out of 10 people would not be able to tell them apart.
Yeah. Or if somebody had to choose which one they like better, I bet you more people would choose the digital one.
Yeah. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No.
It doesn't matter. Optical versus computational? I don't know. I mean, I, like I said, a couple of weeks ago when I shot the little portrait of the girls down on the mall, I was pretty blown away by the quality, at least on the back of the camera or on the back of the phone, of the iPhone X in its portrait mode. It looked pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Does it look great in a print? Probably.
Yeah, I'm sure it looks fine. It looks great. Like, you know, if you don't need it huge, it's probably great. You know, it's like, you know, and that's only going to get better in the same way that digital kept getting better while film stayed the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, to the earlier point, if you went out and shot with a Nikon, I don't know, 990 or, you know, something that was like a 6 megapixel digital and early sensor and put that up against, you know, a medium format roll of Portra 400, is it going to be different? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. 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 But do you think there's going to be the same sort of manual automatic distinction between regular digital versus sort of computational photography, that the fact that computers are so involved takes some of the decisions out of the hands of the photographer, and people will claim that it's, oh, that's a fake picture. Like the camera that didn't really exist. The camera merged 23 different, you know, exposures in order to get that. And you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like that kind of,
I don't know. I mean, will I have a personal stake in it? Like, do I care what other, not probably not. I mean, I might choose one or the other for my own work, but I don't, at this point in my life anyway, I don't have a lot of energy on what you choose and why, if it works for you.
Right.
If you want to shoot on program mode, I mean, what was that interview? Was it David Allen Harvey that was talking to Kai Wong and he shoots in program? Like,
sure.
I think it was David Allen Harvey. Like, so what? Whatever it takes to get the picture, I don't care.
Yeah. By the way, what mode are you a big, what do you usually use?
90% of the time, if not more, I'm in aperture priority.
Ah, okay. I used to be an aperture priority guy. Lately, I end up sitting on manual more.
Yeah.
But
aperture priority with EV compensation. That's typically the way I shoot.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's ultimately probably the most powerful of the different ways you can work. I mean, in the sense that you it does a lot of the work for you, but you also get to control it, you know?
Right.
It's good.
Yeah.
All right. If anybody has any thoughts on those, let us know. podcast@ontakingpictures.com. And we love the questions. So send in questions.
Absolutely.
They're useful. I think they're a fun addition to the show. Do you want to talk about today's photographer of the week?
Today's photographer of the week, yeah, actually came from a few people asking, why haven't you done this guy before?
Did you double check that we haven't?
We have not. Okay. Yeah, we have not. And we're talking about O. Winston Link. Mr. Link was most well known for shooting trains, specifically night shots of trains.
Yeah.
And he would carry around these gigantic lights. I mean, what were they like? These are not, are they HMIs?
The big like movie lights. They're probably like arc lights or something.
They're giant regardless. So that was his thing is shooting trains. And I have an affinity for trains, as some of you may know, and if you don't, now you know.
It's in Jeffrey's blood.
It's in my blood, yeah. But I mean,
what are trainers called? Is there a term for like people on the train?
Well, I mean, it depends on your job. I mean, if you're an engineer or you're a conductor, my father was a brakeman.
There you go. There's a good word.
My grandfather was a conductor and an engineer.
I like the fact that train the trucks, you know, like the actual thing with the wheels.
Yeah,
those things last many train cars above them. You know what I'm saying? Like they get reused a lot. They get rebuilt and reused. So like some of the trucks on some of the subway cars in New York are like 50 years old because those things are nearly indestructible, you know, and they just replace the car on top of them.
And a lot of people don't know that trains are electric.
All trains or most
the diesel. Well, the diesel engines are used to drive the generators that move the train.
Oh, right. Because
the electric motors have more torque.
Oh, yeah. Right. So nowadays, yeah. But they used to be steam and stuff.
Yeah,
nowadays,
you're saying. In fact, that's what you'll see in Winston Link's photographs. So you'll see these big, beautiful steam trains. Oh, they're so beautiful. I mean, just as pieces of machinery, they're just gorgeous.
Yeah.
How do you not like trains? I don't get it.
It always reminds me of the Station Agent trains.
Yeah. Terrific movie, right?
Oh, it's a great movie. If anybody out there hasn't watched
Peter
the Station
Dinklage.
Agent.
What's the other guy's name?
Bobby Cannavale.
Cannavale, yeah.
Cannavale, yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle Williams is in it. Patricia Clarkson is in it.
Terrific movie.
Yeah. The guy that Bobby plays is very much like Nick at the diner up the hill from me.
Yeah.
That's the kind of
love
guy
he comes every day with his truck.
Truck. If you haven't seen this movie, it's what sort of put Dinklage on the map as a lead actor. Is a good film. Sorry, go back to the other
side. All right, so a little about Mr. Link.
By the way, shot on Super 16.
Station Agent was?
Yeah.
Nice. So see, listeners, you could go get yourself a Blackmagic Cinema Cam and make a feature film.
Well, actually, this was an actual film, but go ahead.
Best known for his photography and sound recordings. This is from Design Gallery. Of the last days of the steam railroad and for pioneering night photography. As a teenager, Link developed early interests in photography, locomotives, and rail yards. Amid the Depression era, Link graduated from the Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn with a degree in civil engineering. Soon after, he took a job as a photographer for a public relations firm, an act that launched his lifelong photographic career. Link's reasons for shooting at night were simple. For one, it was more romantic and dramatic. Totally agree. For Link, the trains were comparable to Garbo and Dietrich at their most glamorous. Secondly, steam from the trains against a night sky photographed white. Against a day sky, it came out a dirty gray. Whatever the circumstances, Link's pictures were an intense labor of love. Indeed, he discovered shortly after starting the Norfolk and Western project that no one was much interested in photographs of a fast-disappearing mode of transport. This was, after all, the beginning of the era of the great American car. And it goes on. You can read that for yourself and download the PDF.
In the gallery link that you had there, the Danziger Gallery one,
yep.
Fourth shot in, strobes they were, apparently. I think they were those big flash bulbs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it looks like he's shooting on, what is that,
speed graphics? Something like that, yeah.
Or, yeah, crown graphic, something like that.
You know it's hardcore when you have to wear gloves to take the pictures you're taking because of the electrical issues involved.
Right.
the heat and electricity that is involved.
Not a lot of people know that Winston Link went through 37 assistants.
Yeah.
Literally.
Hey, boss,
went
do I...
through 37 assistants.
Don't touch that.
It's like the scenes in the cartoons where all you see is the glowing skeleton.
It's like in Spinal Tap where they have like 37 drummers because they keep dying mysteriously. Here's the thing. You look at that and you go, okay, let's say you're using those flash bulbs and those are somehow calibrated, right, to be a certain power or whatever it is. How the hell do you figure out exposure at night with flash bulbs? Because it's not like you just, okay, just reset. You got to replace all those damn, you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
Yeah. And these things are in motion, so you get you get one shot
no
as it
Polaroid.
Goes by. Right, right. Yeah,
anyway,
really phenomenal work.
Impressive stuff, yeah. The one, it's a lot of the best pictures show sort of a weird dichotomy. Like, there's the one, number 7 in that gallery thing, where there's a horse-drawn carriage,
right.
And the horse has his head down as the train goes by, where
right.
the train was taking over the horse. And then there's the classic shot of the drive-in with the airplane on the movie screen, where the car and the airplane are taking over for the train. It's sort of, you've had your day, get out of the way, Pops.
Right, right.
Which is just always.
But they're still
a
just beautiful
thing.
Objects. They're still wonderful machines.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very cool. Good one. So people have sent that in. So
yeah, a few people have sent it in.
I'm glad
we finally
got around to using it.
O. Winston Link. And for those of you who are where did we just say? It was Roanoke? Roanoke, Virginia.
Roanoke,
there is a
Virginia.
Winston Link museum, which I have yet to go to. I'd like to. There's also a B&O museum in Baltimore that I've not been to yet.
Where's Roanoke, Virginia? That's far or no? That's the Blue Ridge
here.
Mountains. It's up in the mountains.
Let's see. So D.C. to...
Oh, it's way down there. Yeah, it's far.
Roanoke. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a journey.
That's a ways.
That's a 4-hour drive. That's not bad. Road
no,
trip
it's,
for
it
4 hours?
No, it could be a little, like a long day trip.
Does anybody want to meet up in Roanoke, Virginia and go to the Link Museum?
I have to go to Boston tomorrow for a shoot and back again, so.
That's the other way, though.
I know. I'm
You're
just
no
saying
help.
That. I'm just saying
You're
that
no
it's, the
help, Wadman.
It's the equivalent of the distance that I have to drive tomorrow.
Ugh.
Or sit in the car while somebody else drives. I'm just, you know, I'm almost as fascinated by O. Winston Link's lighting setups as I am, like, the pictures of his lights. I'm like, what in the?
And not a meter in any photograph.
Yeah, who the, what the, how the?
Yeah. Well, he can tell by how electrocuted his assistants are. It's like, whether how many stops up or down he needs to go.
He, like, pulls it apart. He's like, yep, medium rare. Perfect. All right, let's...
Let's reset, people.
Let's go. One more time. If you'd like to get a hold of us, 347-687-9411, podcast at untakingpictures.com, at Bill Wadman, at Jeffrey's Doris, Wadman365 on Twitter, names on Instagram, get Jeffrey's book at photographybytheletter.com.
Hey, speaking of which, had a really good response to the bundle, so I'm going to extend the bundle for another week. So if you want to get the paperback and the ebook together and save some money doing it, you can do that.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So go check that out. And so next week, I think I'm going to be in Austin, but maybe I'll bring a microphone with me and I'll call you from Austin. But
why don't you
talk about
go
that.
To the 5x5 headquarters? Won't they let
you? Well,
actually,
you know what? I was thinking about that. I was gonna let me ping Dan and Hattie and see if I can go.
Like, certainly, they've got a mic that you can use for an hour in the studio.
Yeah, assuming it isn't being used by Dan. But yeah. That's actually a good idea. Maybe I'll go to 5x5 headquarters and record from there.
HQ, as it were.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's good. So thank you very much for listening. As always, fun show, Jeffrey.
Yeah, good show. Thanks for being here. I'm glad you are back, and now you can go get some sleep.
Oh, my God. Actually, I have a doctor's appointment, and I have a shoot later, so I think I'm just going to stay up and push it.
You know what you should do, in all seriousness? Here's what you should do.
Caffeine.
And I know you're not a big coffee person, but go get a double shot of espresso and then do a coffee nap. And I would bet money that you would wake up and feel better.
I could also take an Excedrin and then take a nap and wake up and I'd get.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't get any coffee.
Yeah, but the coffee's all right not getting it. The caffeine's the part I need.
All right. Say goodbye, Gracie.
Bye, Gracie.
See you next week, guys. Thanks for listening.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you want to say. Say, will leave me out.